from the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State and all over the world on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Going into our 15th year of the show, man. I'm looking forward to it. Didn't think we'd last 15 minutes. I really didn't. Not that I think we've had a great show over these 15 years, but we've had a lot of fun learning a lot of things from a lot of great people over the course of that time, and been able to expand the show in many ways, and that all being in part to our friends at Not Just Guns, Cedar Street at 127 in Mason. Definitely more than just guns. You know, they got your everyday carry stuff. They've got some knives and some ammunition and accessories, everything you need, and it's all at their website as well, notjustguns.com, and you can find that link on our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Thanking our friends also at Conquest Sense in Davison, Michigan, and, of course, the United Deer Farmers of Michigan as well. Now, on the Conquest Sense hotline, our good friend Mark Sack, outdoor writer and an all-around great angler, joining us right now. Mark, literally just getting off the boat because you wanted to put a few bluegill in the freezer, or, as this case may be, fresh into the frying pan. How are you, buddy?
Yes. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well, and a little envious because you're going to have a nice little shore lunch with some bluegill.
Oh, and some walleye.
And yes. Some walleye. Because yesterday you were out, you said you had some luck with a big slabber.
Oh, man. We were fishing. We actually were going to run to Lake Erie yesterday, and we had that blow, and they never predicted that blow. That thing, they said like 10 to 15 yesterday, and we said, okay, we'll go to Erie and fish, you know, out of Sterling State Park, and it's an offshore, so it'll be good. It'll be a nice little chop. Well, it ended up 35-mile-an-hour fast. And it's like, come on, you guys. So we ended up going to the St. Clair River and launched out of Algonac. And we were fishing bottom bouncers real slow with the trolling motor down the break, which is right about at 24 feet. You know, it breaks down into the shipping channel. And we were just running real slow down that break and just picking away at them. And all of a sudden, that rod loaded up and, geez, I thought I had a log, of course, you know, and then I thought I had a muskie. Comes up, it was a 30.5-inch walleye.
Wow.
And they're in there. I think my next article is going to talk about, you know, midsummer big walleyes, because there are a few places in Michigan where you can still connect with some really nice fish like that. But, you know, you have to know when and where, too. You know, they're not like spring, that's for sure.
Right. It's not like that spring bite where I mean, they're there. It's just, you know, it's just a matter of getting one. Even in the fall when they're putting the feed bag on, you know, you'll run some big ones later on in the year. But midsummer, you know, or the early parts of summer, late spring, early summer, you don't hear about that much. You hear more about the good eating sizes, the legal and above size walleye, the younger ones that are great eating fish. But you never hear about that great big catch, and that's something that I think is going to be pretty cool for our listeners and your readers to find out about, is, you know, finding that trophy walleye in the course of the summer.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, most of those fish, especially out of that river system, those bigger fish, they'll come at night. You know, you don't hear a lot about it from the handliners, but the handliners will hit those fish at night. They're much more, the big fish are much, much more active at night than they are during the day like that, but We were doing a pretty specific technique where we, you know, run the bouncers real tight to the boat, and then we dump to both sides. And when I say dump, we'll do about a 90-degree turn and run up the break and just run it right into the fish. I mean, that bouncer just goes right over the top, and that crawler harness just glides right into their nose practically, you know. And it was a tough day yesterday. We had a cold front. We had wind. We had, you know, there's a little bit of dirt coming down because it was so riled up. And we had a mayfly hatch over there. So you know, you have all those things working against you, so you got to slow down. You got to really get specific. You got to get spot on the spot. We couldn't catch them in 22 feet. We couldn't catch them in 26 feet. We could catch them in 24 feet. So it was just one of those days. But we got a good bunch of fish. And, you know, today I decided I was going to run out on my little lake and get a few. I got 10, 12 nice bluegills to go with it, you know, and we'll have a great meal tonight.
You know, and that's so cool to hear. And you know, when you have that win, the unexpected win, having a backup plan instead of letting that ruin your day is always pretty essential. And when you have, I mean, when you're in Michigan, over 10,000 lakes and the rivers and everything else, it's pretty safe to say that you've got a close backup plan.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's a lot of good inlands that are producing really well, too, but you got to fish them. You got to get out there and you got to start learning those inlands, too, so that you can add those to your backup list, too. But I've been fishing the St. Clair River for 35 years, I think, you know, and it's always a wonderful trip, because just going down that shoreline down there, seeing the boats, seeing the houses down there, it's a great trip to take the wife too, because there's so much to look at down there. There's so many places you can pull up to. The only bad thing is the water level's so high over there. It's really a shame for those folks, because some of the break walls are up higher than the houses are. And that water level is 2 inches from the top of those break walls over there. And it was unbelievable to see it, you know?
Do you remember just not that long ago, we were scared to death about how low the water levels were on the big lakes?
Absolutely, because I was one of those guys running across those reefs, you know, and I'm going, uh-oh, you know, our Navionics isn't going to be right here, you know. And so, you know, we were all worried about that. Well, you look at it now. And at that time, we were about 2 feet low.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're 3 feet higher than normal. So that water level's up 5 feet from those years when it was 3 feet low.
Yeah, it really makes a big change for things. Mark Sack is our guest here, outdoor writer and angler. And, we fill our show with great guys. So I almost need not have to say that. But it's cool. And, you know, Mark, one of the things that I don't think people think about or talk about when it comes to walleye fishing, something I've done personally, and I want to get your take on this. My buddy's had a place on Houghton Lake for years and years, right at the mouth of the Cut River. And I've done so much shore fishing for walleye there, because it's a big mud puddle, Houghton Lake is. And when they come in to feed at night, I've even had a lot of success with a very small topwater lure. And it's just weird, because nobody ever talks about topwater for walleye, but sometimes that early dusk and almost to nighttime bite is like super hot.
Absolutely. And I'll tell your viewers a great little lure to get for that too. And I'm not sponsored by these guys at all, but I bumped into this lure and this thing is great. It is a hopper stopper from Storm. It is a little tiny grasshopper, and it's only about an inch and a half long, but it's got the squared off front. It doesn't have a bill at all. It's a popper,
mm-hmm.
you know. So it's just got the squared off nose on it, and you start popping that thing, and it's a real faint pop to it. Everything in the lake will hit that thing. It's unbelievable, and we've got plenty of walleyes on that thing, and it's just. If you can find one of those things, buy it, because you could put it on your kids' pole, too, and they will be busy all day with bluegills and perch and bass and walleye. It's a great little lure to throw off a dock, I can tell you.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because mine was a Rebel Cricket. So
there you go.
We weren't too far.
Very, very similar. Very similar.
That's hilarious that you brought that up, because I'm like, well, maybe I can get away with not saying. But, yeah, it's a Rebel Cricket. It's something very small, but it made just enough action on that top water, especially as they're coming in to feed in those areas, even from shore, man. Dinner was right there. All legal, all good eating walleye, and Houghton Lake is such a great fishery for walleye and bluegill as well. And smallmouth. Oh my gosh, the smallmouth are great as well. But it's stuff that you don't think about. You know, we've talked about it one other time before about top water fishing for walleye in those times, and when the mosquitoes were coming out, believe me. So were the walleye. It was one of those deals. But we're talking with Mark Sack right now. We're going to catch up more with him in a couple of seconds. Mark, hang on. I appreciate it. And we're going to find out about some legislative action that's going on that we've been kind of following here on the show. We're all being brought to you by our friends at the United Deer Farmers of Michigan. Find a link to their website on ours at wildmichiganradio.com.
Thank you. You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan.
Turn the quiet up, turn the noise down. Let this old world just spin around. I want to feel its sway.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State, all over the world at wildmichiganradio.com. Happy to have you here because we've got a lot of things going on, man. We're talking a lot about the outdoors, and if you missed earlier, we were speaking with Tom Nelson, a host of The American Archer, and talked about something very private to him that is now very public. It was an open-heart surgery that Tom had, and the healthiest guy I knew, and there was issues that he didn't even know about, and very happy to have that conversation. You can pick it up on our podcast at wildmichiganradio.com. Right now, though, speaking with Mark Sack. Mark is an outdoor writer and an angler and just all around, you know, fun to talk to. Very very informative conversations we've always had with you, Mark. And, again, always happy to have you here, everybody here on the show. But we've been talking a little bit about commercial angling and the recreational angler going head-to-head about some things going on in the Great Lakes. The commercial anglers kind of want to, you know, take more and take more and take more, but yet they're not putting anything, really, when you look at the numbers, when you look at the numbers of what we're spending as recreational anglers in the state, they're not even pennies to dollars doing anything close to that.
Yeah. No, and it's, you know, anglers, the sportsmen are spending millions on this thing. We're actually spending $1 million just on oversight for commercial fishers. And, you know, once that license is established with them, they're paying minimal monies just to throw those nets out there. And, you know, that bill, the three good bills that would really create more oversight on the commercial folks is in the Senate Natural Resource Committee this week. And yesterday they had a hearing on that. And Ed McBroom is a senator from the UP, and he is the chair of the Senate Natural Resource Committee. Mr. McBroom also is a co-sponsor of the pro-commercial bill, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there's another bill that Kevin Daley put out, and that bill is basically going to give commercial fishermen anything they want, basically. I mean, it's the bottom line is they sat down with a couple folks in that industry as well as a lobbyist for that industry, and they said, what do you want? We'll put it in the bill. And they gave them everything they asked for, and they put it in that Senate bill that was introduced by Daley. So now the other three bills have to go through the committee of the gentleman that is a co-sponsor of the other side, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If I can, try not to confuse everybody, because it's one of those deals. But you know, it's like, why? How in the world do we? Why do we do that in our political system? You know, it's. I mean, that bill's never going to make it out of that committee. I find it hard to believe that it can. But you know, there's other things that can happen. Obviously, they can create compromises, they can work on some other issues. But the big problem was COVID messed it all up, because we don't know where anything is going now. I mean, that was the problem. It delayed it. Now they're finally getting back together. They're finally talking about it. You know, Trout Unlimited represented very well yesterday. Amy Trotter from NUCC mm-hmm. represented very well yesterday. There's a few folks that are in support of it. We would really like the good bills to go to a full Senate vote. We would like to see that, because as sportsmen, we deserve that. We've done a lot of things in this state for our fisheries. We deserve to have that shot to see how the full Senate feels about it, and not just a co-sponsor of the opposite bill who's for the commercial matters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't know if it's going to get there or not. I'm not, you know, I mean, we've got a long ways to go with it yet. But I'll tell you right now, it's going to be an uphill climb. I don't know, you know, I'm hearing some other things, but it's not even worth putting out there yet, because
right.
It's all rumor and innuendo at this point. So you don't want to throw that stuff out. you can only reflect back on the hearings that took place yesterday and, you know, really just, you know, call your senator. You know, that's the main thing. If we all take time to do an email and call our senator and say, look, we do not want commercial fishers to take game fish in Michigan. You know, they're going to sell them. I mean, and especially when you look at the restaurant situation right now and the fact that, you know, this virus may not be done. We don't even know yet for sure. So What's going to happen with all the restaurants around? Are they going to be open? Are they going to have to close again? What's going to happen with them? You know, and so you're going to all of a sudden give commercial anglers 20% of the walleyes in Saginaw Bay. What are they going to do with them? Yes. Well, they've got to ship them out somewhere. So they're going to take our game fish that we raised as sportsmen, all of our license money and all of our excise tax money, you know, created that fishery up there, and we're going to give 20% of it to the commercial angler so they can ship it out of state. It doesn't make any sense.
Speaking with Mark Sack here on Wild Michigan, Mark, I see them posting, you know, that our customers, you know, our customers are demanding this and they're demanding that, and, you know, we deserve. Hello, commercial fishing industry, listen to me closely. How can you justify deserving 20% of Saginaw Bay walleye and other places that you want to claim by not putting anything into it? While commercial anglers, even though I may not even be a walleye angler, but I buy a fishing license and a portion of that is going to funding, stocking, and this awesome fishery we have had, especially with the walleye, for the past 10, 12, 15 years, you know, they're taking. So in my opinion, y'all need to be quiet and let us do our thing. But because whatever influence you have, and I'm not going to speculate on air, but I'll do it all day long off air, as to how you're getting, you know, how these lobbyists are pulling the strings in Michigan's Senate and the House in your favor, then, and you can take that exactly how it sounded, okay?
Well, that is the truth, what you just said. I mean, that is happening. We know that it's happening. Kevin Daly admitted that in a meeting in Bay City. He said that, you know, they wrote him a check. They wrote him a check.
Yeah.
They support his campaign. You know, and it's like, dude, you need to check out how this is affecting the state of Michigan and the sportsmen. You know, we've got one of the best fisheries in the entire planet. People from Alaska, guides from Alaska, want to come down and fish our salmon and steelhead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's a very, very special place. And to get a measly check that really wasn't even that big from what I understand, but they wrote him one.
Right.
You know? And to sell out, you know, the sportsmen and the fishery is just beyond me. It really is.
Well, I tell you, Mark, we're up against the break right now. I appreciate you joining us and you know, appreciate the information, because you know what? The worst part about a politician is after they get elected, their whole job is to get reelected, and I'm about tired of it. So really look at who you're putting in your office in your neighborhood, especially the guys that want to keep their campaign going at the cost of what we put into it. So more coming your way. This is Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Thanks again to Mark Sack.
Nick Mudd, Michael Waddell's Bone Collector, and you're listening to my main man, Duran Martinez, on Wild Michigan.
Rifle in a gun rack, hanging in the back glass, buck knife on my belt, ain't no lamp for sale around here.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, being brought to you by Not Just Guns, located in Mason, Michigan. Cedar Street at 127. Wednesday nights is their gun auction night. And the next day, man, this is the great thing about Not Just Guns. Day after the auction, guns are ready. People are lined up, getting their stuff, getting what they paid for, and you pay what you want to pay. That's what the beautiful thing about an auction is. And they do the rest. Check them out online, notjustguns.com. And we're going to speak with Doug Roberts from Conquest Sense right now. Living with the deer 24/7, 365. Doug, welcome back. How are you today?
I'm doing good, Duran. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks. And a very brief conversation we had off air is going to lead to questions I never thought about. Now, I know we've talked a little bit about how the high waters, and when there's a lot of water out there from the rains we've had and will still continue to get this year, affecting the rivers and the lakes and things of that nature. But we don't think about how it's affecting some of the ground wildlife, how it's affecting the ground nesting birds or even deer, because, I have seen more fawns in daytime and walking around and things like that, Doug, than I have ever seen this year.
Duran, you got a number of things. One, that a lot of the deer, the does and the fawns are being pushed out of their fawning areas because they're underwater. And so everybody's seeing deer out in the open much more right now because they can't get into the areas where they normally would be, one where it's lower, one where it's cooler. It's not that we've had warm weather, but they're flooded out. Everybody's got water standing in places that water has never stood before. And thank heavens it's been cool because we haven't had stagnant water up to this point.
Right. And one of the things I thought about was, well, you know what? We can really lower the risk of EHD this year so far because things have been wet. But like you said, stagnant standing water can cause issues as well.
Well, here's the problem we have. We've got more water than I think we've ever had. I mean, the Great Lakes are higher than I think they're at the highest they've ever been. You've got all these pools of water throughout the woods and the farmlands that normally wouldn't be there, and now we're going to get hit 80 degrees. So you have natural bacteria in the ground that are everywhere, but they congregate in these stagnant water pools, coccidiosis, giardia, EHD as it comes back, in the summer when it gets hot. There's many more. Well, as these fawns start drinking out of these stagnant water holes, because that's what they're going to do, they pick this up. Coccidia is a big one. It multiplies thousands of times per minute in their system, and it kills them very, very quickly. So, here on the farm, that's one of our greatest fears is how do we get rid of all of the water and dry everything up quickly before these fawns start drinking out of those stagnant water holes?
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be an issue till we realize it's an issue, and we don't think about it. I mean, Sarah and I were driving down the road out to my dad's place out in Langsburg. She's like, oh, I just wish I could see a fawn. Boom, there it is. I mean, seconds after she said it, here's one standing right by the edge of the field. Again, these are low-lying areas where there's a lot of flooding occurring that normally wouldn't be this time of year.
Yeah, it's changed all of the habitat. I mean, from the ground animals, to the deer, and again, hopefully, I mean, look at the farms. Nothing is being planted. Normally, by 4th of July, which is next week, the corn's the corn's knee high by the 4th mm-hmm. of July. Well, a lot of the deer bed in those cornfields. There are no cornfields. They're not able to hide. And so that's why we're seeing so many more of them. And again, if we don't get a lot of these fields in, what are they going to eat throughout the summer and going into the fall? It really could cause a long-term predicament that could be very, very stressful on the deer herd here in Michigan and other states that are having the water problem.
Doug Roberts is our guest here on Wild Michigan. Doug, it brings to mind, too, I know there's a very small amount of people listening that do food plots, and some of my friends that actually do food plots have said, we finally got like one in, and we're waiting on the other five. There's some serious issues with that. It's not just the farmers, it's the people trying to help and improve their deer herd as well.
Like Lincoln Roan is my cousin. He's got that Packer Max, and nobody can get out of these fields. I mean, the hay fields can't get cut and all of this stuff. Now, the good thing is once it does start to dry up, we as hunters can still get our food plots in, but we may lose our spring food plot. We may just have to go to a short summer one and then get into a fall food plot. But on the other side of the coin, Duran, if the farmers don't get their crops in, those food plots are going to become very, very desirable to the deer, because it's going to be one of the main food sources in that area. So it could end up being
it could end up making for a great hunting season come fall once you can get those food plots in.
Doug Roberts, our guest here in Wild Michigan from Conquest Sense. Doug, the browse, what the deer are eating right now, it's lush, it's green. You know, when they can get to the spots where they're used to, not an issue, apparently.
No, right now there's plenty of green growth everywhere. It might be damp. And again, if the water stays, digestibility intake for an animal, especially a white-tailed deer, is totally dependent on the water content in that plant. And right now, all the plants are maxed out. So when a deer does eat a plant, it's getting maximum energy out of what it's eating and into the system. So the deer right now, with what they have, is very, very healthy. But if we were to go all of a sudden now into a drought and we don't have any, you know, farmers' fields planted with anything,
mm-hmm.
we could run into a big problem. So it's, you know, it's a wait and see thing. We're all dependent on Mother Nature.
Now, a buddy of mine, he's a big time waterfowler, and when he talks about what the geese eat during the summer, it's the cool foods, the greens, and then
yep.
what he calls the hot foods, the grains, the corn, the beans, and the things of that nature. I can see, like you said, where it's could be a big issue, which won't hurt the farmers' feelings any, but at the same time, it could have an impact on how the deer herd is, especially come wintertime.
Oh my goodness, it's gonna impact the geese, the ducks, the deer, all of that, just because they don't have those hot foods. That's what builds the fat content for the winter, the cornfields, the soybeans, those type of things. That's how they pack that extra weight on and get that fat layer through. And if it's not there and they don't have the fat layer, and we have another winter like we just came through, you're going to lose a large number of deer just to freezing and starvation, because their body's going to feed off itself to create heat and energy, and that can only last so long.
Right. Now, in your opinion, how did we do last, you know, with the long, never-ending winter that we had?
Actually, I think we did very well. I think overall the deer herd did very well. What it does do, I always kind of like those little polar dips, because it really tells you the health of a deer herd. The weak ones are going to drop over dead. The strong survive, which makes you a stronger, better, healthier deer herd overall. I think we did well. Everyone's seeing a lot of animals everywhere throughout the state of Michigan from when I'm talking to them. So I think we came out of the winter, which was a hard winter, exceptionally well.
Yeah, we've been seeing, again, a lot of deer. I mean, probably a few more than normal because of the weather and everything. But,
yeah.
Boy, I tell you what, are they red right now? Holy
yep.
cow, I've never seen colors like this.
Yeah, it's contrasting against such a green background. But, boy, they are. They're just that beautiful, gorgeous, that rust red summer, you know, coat for that cooler weather. I should say a cooler coat for that warmer weather.
Right, but, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. Doug Roberts is our guest here. We're going to speak more with him. You can find out what he's up to and find all the new products at conquestsense.com. And don't forget, look for that ATA-approved sticker on Conquest Sense, because they are ATA-approved and perfect for your next hunting adventure coming up in the fall. It's Wild Michigan.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan.
Turn the quiet up. Turn the noise down. Let this old world just spin around.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State. Being brought to you by Conquest Sense. Find them online, conquestsense.com. And we are speaking with Doug Roberts of Conquest Sense right now. And Doug, you have got a live feed on the YouTube, because I like to put the in front of everything, on the YouTube. Now, this is the largest typical three-year-old male in the country that you have, and you have a live cam on his area.
That's correct, Duran. Kaiser, at 3 years old, you know, in the deer farming industry, took first as a three-year-old. He grossed out at 238 inches, typical at three. But the live deer cam, what's cool about that is it's 24/7 on YouTube. It's just Conquest live deer cam, and you can watch him grow his four-year-old set. And I can tell you right now, his four-year-old set is bigger at this point in time than he was as a three-year-old. So if he keeps going, he'll outdo his three-year-old set. So it's kind of fun to watch. I even get on at night, and I just get on, and I kind of watch the deer in the pen. You know, it's one of the pens we can't see from the house. So kind of fun to watch your own deer on a camera.
It is. I'm actually watching right now. There's not a whole lot going on, but at least it's nice out there.
It's nice. It's sunny, and it's getting warm. So they're all back in the woods where it's probably 10 degrees cooler. And you'll see them right around noon, 1 o'clock. They'll all come running up. They'll get a quick bite to eat. They'll get a drink of water, and they'll all run back into the woods. and then they'll come out in the evening, so when it starts to cool down.
It was cool. I don't know what it was that just flew by that camera, but it was a rocket, man. So you can watch that on YouTube, find it, the Conquest Deer live camera is going on. And let's talk about, you know, out of the controlled, I would say semi-controlled, because you can't control the weather and what they do within the confines of their area, which is a pretty large area, it seems. But let's talk about wild deer right now. They're getting lots of water through the plants, a lot of greenery right now. But we don't have that heat. We don't have that heat raising the blood pressure of the deer, sending it through the blood through the antlers and giving it that growth. But, I mean, is it or is it not affecting, you know, good antler growth this year?
Right now, I would say it's not affecting. What's happening is they're getting so much nutrition out of every mouthful because of the water content, and everything is lush and it's fresh. So they're getting a tremendous amount. I think we're fine right now as far as antler growth. It sure would be nice to see July and August ramp up those temperatures, because we do know when that blood pressure increases a little bit, the blood flow is going faster through the antlers, and it's putting more calcium up there, which pushes more antler out. You know, years ago, I told you we did that study up in Canada, and on a hot, humid, hazy day, we had our mature bucks pushing 2.5 inches of antler in 24 hours.
Wow.
That's a tremendous amount of antler. You know, but again, it took that very specific, hot, humid, hazy day where they just couldn't cool down as much, and it just, the blood flow just pumped it. So you had a lot of extras and a lot of big antler.
Now, we have this ban on baiting and supplemental feeding and you know, nutrients and minerals, things of that nature, which I don't think is going to stop a lot of people. Again, not encouraging illegal activity, but the products are still legal to buy. They're legal to own. You just technically can't put them out. And
correct.
They're going to go out.
Yeah, they are, and I think in some areas, I think the deer are going to need it, especially come fall. Again, talking with the farmers, and that's what I'm in. A lot of the farmers have decided they're not planning. It's just gotten too late. They still haven't got in. If they don't get in this week, pretty much how do they get anything in? They won't get it. But so it may be the hunters, even though it's illegal, and again, I'm not saying they should do it either. It's a personal decision, but I will say up in the northeast corner, we have to be very careful. The TB area seems to be spreading.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be an issue, and that's one disease that can transfer to humans very, very quickly through the air, so we need to be extremely careful of not congregating deer up in that zone, because that is an issue. I will say that, so I hope the hunters don't feed up in that area for that reason, because it spreads very, very quickly and it can be very detrimental to us as humans.
Well, you know, and the thing is, too, I don't know what's being talked about, what has been talked about behind closed doors regarding this issue. You know, will we see a change? Will we see lawmakers say, you know what, it's going to be okay, just maintain or reduce the amount you're putting in?
Oh. Yeah, right now, I'm in all those meetings and have privy to information, and the DNR, the NRC Commission, they're holding their ground. They're not going to reverse the baiting and feeding ban for this year. And what do they do in the future? I don't know. That's a decision they have to make. I think they'll look at the CWD, the infection rate. Is the area going to spread again? There's a number of things, but beginning of the year, I would have thought that it would have been reversed, but it kind of locked down. There's a lot of legislators that there's some bills that put in to legislate it back in to allow baiting and feeding, and I just don't see those going anywhere. Again, if you look at the Lower Peninsula, Duran, and you look at the area of CWD infection, that 16 county, then you take the TB area up there and how many counties it has, that's about half the Lower Peninsula. And I think based on that it's already half of the Lower Peninsula has an issue. I think that's why they just did it statewide.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming that CWD zone is going to expand again this fall, and we know the TB zone just added two more counties. So that being the case, logically, I think the DNR said, let's just ban it statewide in the Lower Peninsula rather than pick and choose areas and then have to change them again. It can be very confusing. So I've tried to find some rationale in that thought process, and I think that's where it come from, and I can't disagree with the DNR on that.
No, I understand. In the beginning, there was some question, and yeah, I did question, and I questioned the MUCC and their position on it, but. As we move forward, I'm still questioning things. I'm always going to question things. I'm not just going to go, okay, I'll go along with it. You know, that's not my nature.
Right. We need to. I mean, the big argument now is what's the difference of a little bait pile of 2 gallons and a food plot that you're still congregating deer in? And again, if the farmers don't get their fields in, that food plot is going to be a huge congregation of deer in most areas.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Again, with CWD, we don't know. You got some researchers that say baiting and feeding does not do anything to spread the disease until your incidence rate gets over 1%. You have others that just are the old school. Anywhere you congregate animals, you increase the chance of spreading disease. We know that science was done on bacterial and viral infections, which tuberculosis is. That study's never been done on prions. So that's where some of them are arguing and going, you've never studied this, so why are you using this old science to fit a new disease?
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, they have no studies or they have nothing else to go on, so we're just going to do the status quo. And that status quo may be right. We really don't know because the studies haven't been done. But there's so much research being done right now that is just on the edge of hopefully slowing CWD down or stopping CWD. And I know the DNR just, I think this weekend through MSU, just made a decision on spending some of their money actually on research to try to stop and fix CWD rather than just finding it. So it's a good step forward.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, now we've established the problem, let's figure out how to fix it. So
exactly, and that's been the downfall. Our industry has spent millions trying to figure that out, and we need help from the agencies, the states, and so on, and we're finally starting to see that happen. So it's looking good.
Well, good. Hey, it's always good to hear some encouraging news, and both you guys today have given us that, and we appreciate that a great deal. Appreciate all you do with us here from the end of Conquest Sense, and again, the live cam on the YouTube. Look up for the Conquest live deer cam on YouTube, and you'll see the largest 3-year-old grow out those 4-year-old antlers, and maybe we'll all take a lesson in letting them grow a little bit, get a little bit older.
Hey, makes a little difference when they get older.
It does. It doesn't have to be 300 inches, but you know what? It's halfway there is always a start. So
it's a good place to start.
All right, Doug Roberts, appreciate you as always. ConquestSense.com, NotJustGuns.com, and David A. Rose, find him at WildFishing.com here on Wild Michigan.